Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men for me to deliver Midian into their hands. In order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her, announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead." So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. But the Lord said to Gideon, "There are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them out for you there. If I say, 'This one shall go with you,' he shall go. But if I say, 'This one shall not go with you,' he shall not go." So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, "Separate those who lap the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink." 300 men lapped with their hands to their mouth. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place." So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to their tents, but kept the 300, who took over the provisions and trumpets of the others. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. During that night, the Lord said to Gideon, "Get up, go down against the camp, because I'm going to give it into your hands. If you're afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah and listen to what they are saying. Afterwards, you will be encouraged to attack the camp." So he and Purah, his servant, went down to the outposts of the camp. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. "I had a dream," he was saying. "A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed." His friend responded, "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands." When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he worshipped God. He returned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up, the Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands." Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them, with torches inside. "Watch me," he told them, "follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp blow yours and shout, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they had changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. The three companies blew the trumpets and smashed the jars. Grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow, they shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." While each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. Is that it?
That's confessed that I sighed a little bit when David Barnsley asked me to preach this morning. When he told me what the passage was, this one of Gideon fighting the Midianites. One of the reasons why I sighed a little bit was that I thought, in order for this message to really sink in, we're going to have to act it out. And now you're probably sighing because you've heard me say that. It's to do with logistics, I think. Logistics. How could we break 300 clay jars, set alight 300 flaming torches, and blow 300 trumpets in church? And then a sublime thought came to me. It came to me in the bath, where most of my sublime thoughts come from. We could approximate. We could approximate. So instead of breaking 300 clay jars, we could break one. Now, it's fortunate that we don't have to consider 32,000 clay jars. That's one of the main points of this passage. So I thought, before I go any further, it'd be good to sort of think about that for a minute. Gideon originally had 32,000 soldiers. So that would have been 32,000 clay jars if we tried to act it out in its entirety in the church. Can you imagine having to clear up the debris, the shards of 32,000 clay jars? I'm on the cleaning rota in the church, and I would not have been happy at that thought. But the Lord encouraged Gideon to whittle it down to 300 men, 300 soldiers. So that's down to less than 1%. And did you notice the reason that the Lord gave for such advice? It's there in verse 2, and it says, "In order that you may not boast that your own strength has saved you." Now, I think that's such a key verse in this passage that I'm going to ask the dear folk at the sound desk at the back if they would beam up that first verse. I'm going to ask them to beam up various things. But there's verse 2 of chapter 7. The reason why God asked Gideon to whittle down the number of soldiers, in order that you may not boast that your own strength has saved you. So that you're not big-headed, so that you're not arrogant, so that you're not cocky and say, I did it my way, or I believed in myself. That's how I won through. None of that sort of stuff. He wants Gideon and he wants us to say, I did it God's way and I won through because I believed in the Lord. Actually, this is really a really interesting point, so I'll just go on a little bit with it. Because although it's the Lord who helps us win through, we do have to play our part. We don't do nothing. It's a cooperation. And it's like that in every case. Remember when the Lord brought down Goliath by making a stone hit him on the forehead? And we've had a reminder of that in that action song. The Lord brought down Goliath by making sure the stone hit him in the right place on the forehead, but David still had to hurl the stone. It was a cooperation between the Lord and David. And remember when Jesus fed 5,000 people with just 5 loaves and 2 fish? Jesus did that, but the little boy still had to bring the loaves and the fish to Jesus. We play our part, and the Lord does a miracle with it. So we get an idea of what it looked like in Gideon's case by the story of the dream that one of the Midianite soldiers had, where he dreamt that their army, the Midianite army, had been completely undone by Gideon. So the Lord had demoralized the Midianites even before the battle started. And the Midianites' friend says it quite clearly. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands, into Gideon's hands. And that's another... you've beamed it up already. Bless your heart. Thank you. Another important verse in the whole passage. God has given the Midianites and the... God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. But Gideon still had to do his bit with the clay jars, the the flaming torches and the trumpets. Actually, I think the problem for us is not so much to do with being big-headed, cocky, or arrogant, but more to do with feeling like clay jars ourselves. Feeling like we're a bit weak to handle some of the things that come our way. Feeling like we could easily get smashed, like those clay jars did. But that's all right too in the no boasting stakes, because when things do work out, and they do, it's more obvious that God has done it. When they do work out, it can't have been us. We're just clay jars. We couldn't have done it. It's more obvious that God has done it. And as the Apostle Paul says, and these are the next verses I wanted beamed up. The Apostle Paul says, we have this treasure, talking about the good news of Jesus, we have this treasure in jars of clay to show, in order to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. And that's one of the things he says. And the next one, if you could beam it up, Eric, as well. My power is made perfect in weakness. That's God speaking. So it's God's power is made more obvious in our weakness. And that's a really important theme, message in our passage this morning. Anyway, in our approximation, we're going to take the numbers down even further. And we're going to break one clay jar. This one. Now, I'll do it in this plastic container to make sure that the pieces don't scatter too far. And then there's the flaming torches. Or perhaps I should say, torches aflame. I just wondered if I kept on saying flaming torches, you might think I was swearing. So, okay, the torches aflame. Now, these weren't battery-operated torches. They were thick sticks with a live flame on top of them. And just imagine trying to replicate that in church. The risk assessment would never let us get away with it. But we're going to approximate with a battery-operated torch. Let me just like check this one. Yeah, yeah. It does actually work. That's good. Just one battery-operated torch. And thirdly, there's the trumpets. Now, these wouldn't have been the nice-sounding, melodious trumpets like Colin Budenberg and others in this church can play. These would have been ram's horns. This would have been the shofar, the ram's horn that the Hebrew people used as a trumpet, which gave an unearthly strangulated blast of sound. And I'm going to try and imitate it for you. Like that. It's actually very hard to blow the real thing. I've had a go. Do you remember Mandy Richardson in this church? She had one, and I had a go with it. It's easier to do it like this. But it sounds more like a party horn than a melodious trumpet, so I got one of those party horns. Again, just one. Okay, so we've got the approximations to the 300 clay jars, the 300 torches aflame, and the 300 trumpets, one of each. And I'll operate them. I did wonder for a moment whether I could spread it out in the church, but then I thought, no. Health and safety. I'll operate them. So what I'm suggesting is that I break the clay jar, as I say in here, brandish the torch with my left hand. Did you notice that thing about the, there's the torch in the left hand and the trumpet in the right hand, and blow that. And shout out, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." And this is where I wonder whether you would be prepared to come in. And you would all respond to that shout by shouting out, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." A great wall of sound from you. I sort of hope you're up for it. Would you like to practice it? I mean, I don't mean practice breaking the clay jar, because I've only got one of those. I mean practice the shout. So remember what it is. I say, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon," and you shout back to me, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon," loud. Okay? Okay, here we go. "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." You're wonderful. Perfect. Perfect. By the way, have you noticed there are no actual swords in this story? There's no blood. Did you notice that when Zoe was reading? Nobody died. At least not in this part of the story. That's one of the reasons why I wanted Zoe to stop at verse 21. If you'd carried on reading, you'd have got more blood. But I think it's so interesting that right up to verse 21, nobody dies. And I think that reflects something of God's heart, which he says so well in Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 11. And I wonder, Eric, if you could beam that one up next. "I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but rather that they turn from their ways and live." I think that's another very important theme, important message in this part of the story. It becomes a lot more clearer when you go to the book of Ezekiel, but I think it's here in the book of Judges as well. Okay, are you ready? Shall we do it? I have to confess, as well as sighing a little bit, I am a little bit nervous. I mean, what happens if the clay jar doesn't break? Now, one of the things that that I thought was rather intriguing, I've still not quite got to the bottom of, but the purpose of the clay jar was to hide the flame of the torch. Now, how would you hold a flaming torch aflame in this hand under a clay jar? How would it work? I'm not quite sure. But with a battery-operated torch, it's a little bit easier. Like that. Trumpet in the right hand. Okay. Here we go. I didn't anticipate that. "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon."
"A sword for the Lord and for Gideon."
Oh, it's wonderful. It's so good. Do you mind if I do it again? "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Oh, lovely, wonderful. That's absolutely great. Thank you so much. Now, the whole point of doing that was so that the message would sink in. So what have we learnt? And I wonder, again, Eric, if I could ask you to beam up these. These are the three points that I feel come out of the... Actually, they're also on the service sheets, if you want to see them there. that I feel comes out of Judges chapter 7. That the Lord takes our weak, even quirky efforts, including our small numbers. I think that's really quite an important thing, our small numbers. You know, so often as a church, we're conscious of our smallness compared to the society at large, as how few believers there are in our society. But the Lord can take our weak, quirky efforts, even our small numbers, and do amazing things with them to help us to win through. And then secondly, this fact dissuades us from being big-headed, cocky, and arrogant, and boasting that we can do things totally in our own strength. I don't know if that's our biggest problem, but if it is a problem, the way that the Lord things deal with that. And then thirdly, that God takes no pleasure in the death of a sinner, but rather that he turns from his wickedness and lives for Jesus. And I just wanted to say three more things which sort of came to me out of this passage. The weakness theme reflects Jesus' approach to winning through. It's like that for Gideon and for us because it's like that for Jesus. From the Bethlehem stable to the Golgotha cross, there's a weakness theme running right through. But that's how he achieves our salvation. And then secondly, there's a Christian organization called Good News for Everyone, and then in brackets, formerly Gideon's UK, who take Bibles and other Christian literature into schools, hospitals, and other public places like that. Now, Chris and Ailsa Walker in our church are involved in that ministry, and so too are David and Susan Swindale, one of the couples new to Trinity. But the Gideon bit in the title, the bit that's in the brackets, was inspired by today's story. It's a very simple thing to give someone a piece of Christian literature. Some might even say it's a weak thing to do that, but God takes it and uses it and helps people come to know Jesus. I myself was helped by a Gideon Bible that was placed in my university room. And one of the applications that we could get out of today's story is that we would all be more prepared to give away a piece of Christian literature, whether it was a Bible or a tract or something, whether it was through an organization like Good News for Everyone, and I'm sure the Walkers and the Swindales would be very happy to advise you on that if you wanted to do it like that. But it could be done much more informally. There's a pile of leaflets at the back of the church, for instance, that can be used. Just more prepared to do that as a response to this story. And thirdly, we're planning to do all sorts of things to celebrate Trinity Church's 150th birthday next year. Now, some of those things might seem simple and weak, but again, we trust that the Lord will take them and do amazing things with them. Things that help people come to know and to love Jesus. And we do all these things in his name, in his precious name.